Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 354.
This week on the podcast, Black lives still don't seem to matter enough to police departments in California and Georgia.
But don't worry, the Democrats have seen the protests, and boy do they have a compromise for you.
Plus, the threat of COVID is even worse than that time that you stayed in your house for 3 months.
And Trump's new campaign strategy is to just kill his own supporters so he doesn't have to be president for 4 more years.
Biden's VP shortlist is shorter in number and short on excitement.
And you can take Bernie Sanders out of the presidential race, but you can't take his supporters out of the electorate.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. Just got back from the big Pride, Solidarity, Black Lives Matter march.
Slash maybe an insulting march. We don't know because there were two warring marches. We made an executive decision to go to the one we initially planned to go to. Maybe it was the wrong choice. We don't know.
It really felt like it was the right choice. The other protest may have also been the right choice.
Yes.
But the reason that there was like a second march was because there was some debate as to whether this march was actually sort of like the correct Black Lives Matter march to be going to. But it felt very much like it was. I mean, perhaps
it behaved, in our section at least, like the correct march. And that's 100%. All we really could ask.
There were a lot of concerns whether about, you know, like it was going to be too pride heavy and whether, you know, it was like whether this was just an excuse for people to have pride and whether Christopher Street West was still involved. But it seemed
in
fine.
The words of the people who were doing the protest march, whether people would use this as an opportunity to sashay down the street as opposed to.
I would like to sashay down the street. I know, right? Also, you can protest while sashaying. I'm quite certain of it.
If we know anything from living in West Hollywood, it's that. Uh-huh.
We've also, since we last did a podcast, both been tested for COVID-19.
That's right.
You had already been tested once.
Right, yeah.
I'm negative, so at least prior to that march, I was
tested using two different methods of test. Brent got the cheek swab, which
I got the cheek swab. Yeah,
I've now for the second time gotten the nose swab, and it's not comfortable. It's not as comfortable as the cheek swab, you guys.
No, the cheek swab.
I mean, it's fine. Like, I think people really over dramatize it for me, and as someone who has like a paralyzing fear of needles, I was imagining it to be the kind of thing like a shot where I had to be worried about it for days, and then I had to have like PTSD from it after. Because for some reason with needles, if I get a shot, it's not only like horrible while I get it, but I like think about it nonstop for like days upon days afterwards. So that's like really my fear about shots is really more about the like PTSD of having had a shot than it is the shot itself. This was not like that. Like it's like they stick that nasal swab pretty far up your nose and whatnot.
But you and I are both fine. I mean, I had the cheek swab, but you and I have both had enough sinus issues over the years that like a nasal swab,
it's a pretty normal occurrence. No, exactly. Yeah. So I haven't got my results yet though, so I might have given everyone coronavirus at the march rally.
Today. No.
Yeah, nobody knows. No. I'm just trying to do it while I'm in the mode of protesting as frequently as I am, because this is not the only march slash protest that I went to this week. I'm just trying to go every 2 weeks or so to make sure that on a rolling basis, I like am aware of what my COVID status is.
Right.
So I'm not going with the expectation that I like think I caught it at any of these. I'm always very careful.
Yeah, right.
But,
you
know, you do what you have to do. In any case, if we sound spacey, it's because we got sunburned. And that,
we got sunburned. We walked 17,000 steps.
That's right.
We're tired.
Which in quarantine times is a lot. My mother is currently cackling about 17,000 steps as if that's a number of steps that any respectable person would do during the day. Exactly.
Yeah, but when you literally like are one step away from getting bed sores from your couch, like 17,000 steps is a long way.
That's right. We're going to be sore tomorrow, and that's an unfortunate reality of our lives.
Yeah. But it's important that we keep protesting because we still got shit to protest about.
So true. There's been this weird situation here in Southern California where in the last couple days, two men have been found hung from trees in cities outside of L.A., like in L.A. County. And in both cases, the police department immediately declared it a suicide and was just sort of like nothing to see here. But protesters were kind of like, maybe you should find out if there is something to see here. I know in the case, there was one in Palmdale and one in Victorville. And in the case of the victim in Palmdale, Robert Fuller, he'd been someone who'd been active in their local Black Lives Matter chapter. And so there were a lot of people who were just a little bit, you know, sort of confused as to why, with no evidence, the police suddenly declared it a suicide and then decided there was nothing to investigate. Right. And so there were big protests there yesterday, actually, trying to get them to do a real autopsy, which they now claim is in the works, and trying to get like a real investigation into whether this was actually a suicide or whether there was some foul play involved. He was discovered on Wednesday morning, but at around 3 a.m., and near the city hall, which I think the location was particularly suspicious to people. But also his family was kind of like, this is like very out of character. This is not something we would have, that we saw any warning signs for or anything. Right. He wasn't depressed. There had been another victim in Victorville, which is about 10 miles, I think, from Palmdale, 10 or 20 miles from Palmdale, Malcolm Harsh, who was found also hung. And when the police responded, they just sort of automatically declared it a suicide.
Right.
And so now both of them are getting a lot of national scrutiny and, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And his family also says that they find it hard to believe that that is what had happened.
Exactly. So we will have updates about that hopefully next week. Yeah. But it says that apparently, according to the LA County Medical Examiner's Office, at least in the case of Robert Fuller, the cause of death is now pending an investigation, whereas before they had already declared it a suicide. So they are planning to do a full autopsy on him. So hopefully we'll know more then. But the police are sort of claiming that there's no security camera footage of anywhere near there, even though there are security cameras that were recording in the area. And so everyone is just sort of up in arms in this area about that. And then in Atlanta, they had like an actual police shooting last week.
On Friday night, actually. Rayshard Brooks, who's 27, was shot by police at a Wendy's drive-thru. And they've already fired the officer who fired those shots. The chief of police has stepped down. Like, they are not messing around in Atlanta.
No, well, Keisha Lance Bottoms is being shortlisted for VP. She doesn't have time to mismanage this crisis. Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of evidence. I feel like I read a story about this, sort of like a lot of the positive things that like the Atlanta police force like has done over the years, because it's a police force that has had issues, and they've really sort of like, the fact that we already saw the security cameras and the dashboard cameras and everything, they were like immediately released. You know, they just had an issue recently where six police officers were like immediately fired because they were, I think they like attacked some peaceful protesters like in May. So, you know, they're at least sort of like, seem to be like a little bit more on top of things and sort of in terms of how they are operating down there. Now, I'm not talking about in terms of how officers are being treated. I'm talking about sort of like where they're at with some of the things that they have done there, like some of the things that they have implemented as a police force, where they
they're one of the few departments that has a female police chief too, which, I mean, you remember early in the George Floyd protests, that was one of those viral videos of like nonsense feel good police officers listening to crowds that went viral, was of their police chief going through a protest crowd. And just sort of listening to everybody. And so I think that probably what helps in a situation like this is having a police chief who, recognizing that their department has done something inappropriate, is actually willing to step down and does not sort of insist on hanging on like our police chief in LA, is maybe someone who could have also resigned given
or been fired by the mayor given the numerous
situations that have gone on here, just in recent weeks but in recent years. I think even that to me says that that's like a slightly more functional situation, even though obviously I think this goes to show you though that there's limitations to police reform.
Exactly.
And we're going to talk about that, well, in literally 1 second, because we're going to talk about the Democrats' policing bill. But if you are someone who thinks to yourself like, oh, well, the police just need to be reformed, like defunding the police is extreme, but we should just reform them, like, There are plenty of police departments that have tried to institute progressive police reforms, including the Atlanta Police Department.
Yes.
And that is not enough to protect your black citizens, it turns out.
Right. Well, and also one thing that I feel like this particular killing is bringing up questions about that I think is important, because this happens so often when a black man is killed by the police, where we have to sort of like, you know, go back and dig through this person's history as to like why they may have been a bad person, or like, oh, but he stole some Skittles, so like he deserved to die. This one is a little bit more problematic in the sense that like he was drunk, he stole one of the police officers' tasers and ran away from them. So there's been this sort of, a lot of people are sort of like, oh, well, like, you know, use of force, like if you're not going to use of force, like now, then like when it, you know. But stealing a taser is, which is not ultimately a deadly weapon, like as a drunk guy who's just like running away from the police, like the punishment for that is still not being shot dead twice.
Well, and we see it all the time, because we see white mass shooters get taken alive all the time. So apparently the punishment for mass shooting is often not death.
Right. There were multiple officers there. This person could have been taken into police custody without being killed. And that is important to remember as you're watching all of this video of him doing whatever shenanigans he was up to. And look, I saw it. They've released...
They were shenanigans.
Like, there's like four different angles of like various police videos and footage from the Wendy's parking lot. Like, it's not great. But like also that's... You don't die from that. Yeah. You shouldn't anyway. So like, don't forget that when you hear some asshat on television telling you that like he was, you know, doing bad things.
Right.
You still don't get shot for that.
You certainly don't have to be shot for that.
You shouldn't be. You do. Too many black people are getting shot for that. Or exactly. Less than that. But yes.
Right. That's, I think, the kind... And because we have a problem with mass shootings in this country, and because a majority of those mass shootings are committed by white perpetrators, and specifically white men versus black men, we see two very distinct police practices at play all the time on television. Totally. Where, you know, they'll send in whole teams of people to avoid killing a white perpetrator.
Yeah.
And someone with, you know, who is armed with like an entire military's worth of weaponry.
Right.
They'll manage to take alive.
Yeah.
But they somehow can't, you know, figure out how to take a guy who stole a taser alive, even though that is ostensibly what police training is supposed to train you to do.
Right. One thing police training is probably also supposed to train you to do is to not allow a drunk person who fails a field sobriety test to steal your taser from you.
And that's maybe another important question. Well, it's,
like,
this was
a bad cop for shooting this guy. Also, just like generally a bad cop.
He's a bad cop.
He was bad. He's bad a man who was bad at his job.
Right. Yeah, I was actually... there's been a lot of interesting essays and think pieces or whatever written recently about how bored most of the police are. Like, how police often drum up crimes in, you know, and we see this all the time, and that's often what traffic stops are about. That's, you know, oftentimes when police officers do things, you know, whatever whatever your town's equivalent of, like, a stop-and-frisk style policy is, it's because they have some, like, quota or some kind of mandate from the office that is, like, requiring them to, like, drum up crime somewhere as if it's, like, a business for them.
Oh, totally.
And so there's been all of these accounts of people who've either done, like, ride-alongs with police or whatever that are sort of like, the police are just roaming around looking for something to do half the time. And that is why they're getting themselves into this trouble. Like, we don't need the police to just roam around looking for trouble.
Right.
Like, the idea of the police, even if you are somebody who, you know, if you're not an abolish the police person, then you still probably don't think the police's job is to create a business for themselves by inventing crimes. Like,
right.
I mean, because that's, in a lot of places, that's what they're doing, because they're heavily overfunded. There's too many of them. They have a lot of fun toys, and they're constantly being told they have to justify their existence by their superiors, who are then using that to, like, get more supplies and money and, you know, and budget. And they're doing that, they're just, like, they're sending, like, 1,000 officers to respond to, like, routine traffic stops if they think they can get away with it. They're, you know, they're arresting people for things that they had no business pulling them over for in the first place. Like, they're doing a lot of things beyond just killing people that are nonsense things.
Yeah.
That's a new area of literature that I've been sort of fallen into this
week. Well, it's good to think about those things as we're talking about, like, what defunding the police looks like.
Right, exactly. And speaking of that, or not speaking of that at all, the Democrats released a policing reform bill on Monday, the Justice and Policing Act of 2020. Now, there's an interesting thing going on the Hill, which we saw also going on in the Biden campaign, where the mainline Democrats just won't embrace these calls to defund the police.
Correct.
And so they're trying to think of, like, literally anything else that they can do to make it seem like they have heard protesters and heard this movement without accomplishing any of the goals of the movement.
And many of them will also say that they don't want to defund the police and then describe to you what they want to do as, which is defunding the police.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what this bill is, but, like, even Joe Biden himself is like, we're not going to defund the police. But if defunding the police means that we need to relook at what policing means in America and, like, not, and it's sort of like,
right, and put resources into other, it's like, that's exactly what
that
it
is,
means.
That is actually what it means. So that is what we are asking you to do. So when you say that you're not doing that, but then you say that you would do this instead, and you've just described what defunding the police is.
Yeah. A lot of that going on.
These guys, man.
So the Justice and Policing Act, it was written with the help of the Congressional Black Caucus. Yeah.
But also, sorry to interrupt you, but before we go through the list of what all of these things are, and there's some good things in this list. It was ultimately, it's just an omnibus bill of a bunch of various different bills that have been floating around Washington for, like, the better part of a decade, really. So, and like I said, that's not to say that that makes them bad ideas. But there was not new big thinking done here.
No, well, and it's also, it's interesting because, so the House is, the bill is probably going to pass in the House, but it's, we know it's not going to pass in the Senate. They knew that writing it and going in. So it is nothing but a list of ideas.
Right.
So like we have described in the past with numerous other Democratic sort of like landmark legislation, House legislation that we've seen, you know, since Trump took office, that's been a lot, and especially since 2018, a lot of which has been like discussed as if it's like pioneering really big thinking, and then turns out to be like a list of like mediocre ideas that like everyone should agree on.
Right, and that
like,
they've all had and have tried to pass like in their own forms like forever.
This is a list of reasonable ideas, but this didn't have to be a list of reasonable ideas. It could have been a list of any ideas.
It should have been a list of radical ideas is what it should have been.
Exactly. This is a police reform bill. It doesn't appropriate new money for the police, but it doesn't defund any departments and it doesn't call for any of that. So it is not really what these protests have been asking for.
Right.
And it's also, police reform is something that we have seen attempted at the local level in departments all over the country to no avail, including the Atlanta Police Department, which just killed somebody this week. So, I mean, the idea that the best we can do is like almost get behind a police reform bill when we know it's not going to pass. We could pass a bill right now saying that we're sending every resident to Mars. And because it's not going to pass, no one's going to sign it. Like, you could write a bill that says anything. If the Democrats wanted to send everyone to Mars, the Republicans, you know, wouldn't want to pay for that. So they wouldn't pass that. The Democrats could still write that bill and pass that bill.
Yep.
And then just be like, we told them we wanted to send everyone to Mars, and the Republicans would be the party of no. Instead, we have this sort of like mediocre bill where they're not even offering what people are asking for. And then they're going to be like, well, we couldn't because of the Republicans. But it's like no one's even proposed the thing that they shouldn't have agreed with in the first place.
Yeah.
In any case, here's what the bill does.
Yes.
The big headline in the bill is that it ends qualified immunity. And it makes it easier to prosecute problematic police.
Right.
The qualified immunity thing has been a discussion that's been ongoing both at the federal level and at the local level. Basically, qualified immunity gives both police officers and also public officials pretty broad immunity from civil lawsuits. It's also the reason that, like, if you kill one person, you go to jail. But, like, if the governor enacts policy that kills millions of people, like, they just get hired by a lobbyist and continue to have a nice life. It's because you can't sue them in civil court. So this bill makes it easier for people to recover damages against police officers if an officer is sued and found guilty.
Yeah.
We're not really sure what's going to happen because the Supreme Court has upheld qualified immunity doctrines in the past. And so really, a lot of the time now, if you try to sue police officers in civil court, it has to be for like a very specific set of circumstances that has been very specifically addressed by courts in the past. It can't be like a new circumstance that has come up. And so we'll see. The Supreme Court is deciding whether to hear arguments in the next term about a case that challenges qualified immunity, but we don't really know anything about it. And also we don't know what this court's up to. So, so we don't know if this means anything. They also are changing the standard for prosecuting police by removing the word willful so that the prosecutors don't have to demonstrate that there was willful intent to kill or harm somebody. They're going to replace it with knowingly or with reckless disregard so that that way if you don't have to, it's really hard to meet the legal standard of proving willful intent to kill somebody. Right. And so this sort of softens that requirement. And then also it would define a death resulting as anything, anytime that the police officer's treatment was a substantial factor contributing to the death. Right. So like we saw with George Floyd, where they for a while tried to pretend like his death was related to a medical condition that was instigated by someone kneeling on him for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, when obviously you can kill anyone whether or not they have a pre-existing condition by kneeling on them for 8 minutes and 46 seconds. That would address that issue.
Yeah. There's also a National Police Misconduct Registry, which is a proposal from Cory Booker. And that would create a new national registry to track misconduct so repeat offenders can't be rehired at other police departments.
Which this is happens a thing that all happens. The time. Which
that
is
nuts.
Crazy.
Right. So you go and you have a bunch of, you know, use of force misconduct violations, and then you get fired, and then you just go work someplace else.
I'll move to San Diego. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, the legislation would also ban chokeholds and some no-knock warrants. And so we've been hearing a lot about both of these, A, because chokeholds are how George Floyd died, but also how Eric Garner died. And then the no-knock warrant is why Breonna Taylor was fatally shot in her home while sleeping. Activists have rightfully questioned the efficacy of these bans because the New York City Police Department actually banned chokeholds in 1993. So when they used a chokehold against Eric Garner in 2014, that was already illegal, but it did not stop the police from doing it.
Right.
So banning these measures is not, it's not a sort of end goal. It's something you can do it. I guess it doesn't harm anyone, but like it doesn't accomplish anything. And considering that we have multiple deaths in the last 10 years, even from departments where this practice is already banned, I think it's not necessarily a really effective way to, quote unquote, reform police behavior.
It's not an effective way. And I think even Trump was talking about this, and he talked about it in a way that was completely ridiculous. But what he said, I think, is actually not untrue in the sense that, like, what he was just sort of like, well, I don't think that you should be using chokeholds either. But, like, sometimes if you're an officer and you're in sort of like a one-on-one situation, like, and you are, like, sometimes you just do something like that. And, like, that was a ridiculous sort of thing to say. But, like, also,
right, but that's what's happening.
But also that's what's happening. And so, these guys who are using these chokeholds are not thinking to themselves, like, when they go to use the chokehold.
What does the manual say about chokeholds?
Oh, I forgot that this was made illegal in 1993, so, like, I'm not going to do it. So, like, yes, we should, sure, ban them and, like, tell officers not to do them. But, like, that doesn't get us to where we're trying to go.
If you are going to use a chokehold and kill someone as an officer and they are banned, you should get prosecuted for that. That's killing somebody. I mean, it's you killing somebody no matter how you kill them. But I'm just saying, like, considering that we have a tendency not to prosecute these officers in the first place, then banning chokeholds means nothing if you can't be prosecuted for using the chokehold to kill somebody.
Or if you use one and you don't kill someone, if they're illegal, then you should also be fired.
Exactly. Right. This should result in, you know, disciplinary action against the officers that use them. And that is what we saw in 2013 or 2014 with Eric Garner, is that that's not what happens.
Right.
So it's sort of like, I mean, ban anything if you want to, I guess, but like that, there has to be consequences or there's no reason to bother. The legislation also changes some policy for the few police departments that are under federal control, but it attaches funding conditions so that to incentivize state and local governments to also adopt some of these reforms. A lot of them are reforms that don't work anyway, so I guess who cares?
Yeah.
One thing that I think is a good idea, I mean, the most milquetoast of ideas, but is something that should be done, and it's kind of amazing that it's not, is that it would require states to report use of force to the Justice Department. There should be a way for us to track how effective use of force is at the federal level, how often it's being employed, where it's being employed more often, like whether that's leading to different outcomes in those areas. Like if we find that use of force involves no measurable difference to the safety of a community, because we have seen it in multiple areas, you know, we've sort of been tracking it in multiple areas, then like we should think of more extreme ways to ban it. But we can't do that without data. We often, just like with gun violence, we often are, our hands are tied behind our backs because we don't collect necessary data to actually find out what is and is not effective. And especially in the case of policing, and that's something that has a very subjective outcome anyway, like to not have data on use of force makes it very difficult for anyone to argue for or against changes.
Totally.
So that's important. But it would also, it would condition funding on police departments making a commitment to implement racial bias training programs. And that's one of those reform ideas that's never been particularly effective.
Yep.
It's like, I guess it doesn't hurt. But like, if you think that your police department is really forward thinking because they've been implementing racial bias trainings, then like, think again, because those police departments still kill a disproportionate number of people of color all the time.
Right.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to move on. So,
oh, yeah. Say. It would the bill would also change the use of force standard for federal officers from allowing it when it's reasonable, quote unquote, to only when it's necessary to prevent death or serious bodily injury.
Yeah.
And then it would also require federal officers to use de-escalation techniques in place of use of force when it's not going, you know, when it wouldn't meet the standard.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another one that's like, it's, you can ban chokeholds, but are they going to do anything if federal officers use of force for no reason? Like,
yeah,
that's what actually changes things.
Yeah. It would make lynching a federal crime.
That's right. It's kind of alarming that it's not, but if you were paying attention to what Congress was up to before this bill got introduced, they were trying to pass an anti-lynching legislation
in
both the House and the Senate. And they, Rand Paul was involved in the Senate. And then the House and Senate can't agree on a bill, so they can't figure out a conference bill. So they just haven't passed anything. It's like they both agreed that we shouldn't be lynching people.
Yeah.
But they just can't agree on how we shouldn't be lynching people.
Yeah, exactly.
It would require body cameras and dashboard cameras. That's something we've been seeing anyway since
Ferguson a lot of police on the rise. Like,
it's not a foolproof thing because police officers can turn on and off the body cameras at times that don't necessarily show how situations escalated to the point that they're
And if you're not going to, you know, and I guess this bill sort of does do that, but like if you're just because you have body cameras and then you can't get any sort of resulting conviction from what you see on the body cameras, then like what have the body cameras done for anybody?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like,
right, yeah. If you can watch an entire crime play out on a body camera committed by the police officer wearing a body camera and then not convict him, then why bother making the video?
Why waste
the hard drive space?
Yeah. And this is a thing that I'm glad is in this bill, and for a couple reasons, because I think there's a second sort of underlying point to this, which AOC brought up that I hadn't even thought of, so I'm stealing her idea. But anyway, it limits the transfer of military equipment to local police departments. Currently, as we know, there's a whole program where the military is able to distribute excess equipment, including, you know, armored vehicles. It's why we see, the police departments have tanks and various other
things. It's why small towns police departments are sometimes riding around in tanks and armored vehicles.
Exactly. And this is what I had not even sort of like put together, and maybe I should have, but like the idea that the military has these things just in excess laying around that they can give to the police departments is proof that we are also overfunding our own military.
That's right.
So if we're looking for places in the federal government where we can cut, my guess is that it would probably be our military. And we know that because the budget is so inflated. But it's like, I don't want the military to have so much money that they literally have extra tanks, which cost probably tens of millions of dollars to make, lying around that they can just pass out to police departments.
Yeah.
So let's also start defunding the military while we're at it, while we're defunding things.
Like, there is not... If you don't need grenade launchers in the military, There is certainly not a domestic use for grenade launchers.
No.
No police department that has grenade launchers.
Yeah.
There's been an article that's been circling around from, it's actually from 2015, but about how the LAPD's school police
are
going to return their armored vehicles and grenade launchers.
Yeah. Because that's a school separate police force.
Needed grenade launchers.
Yeah.
Like, why are the police in the schools? I mean, separate conversation, but right. why? But also,
it's its own department. Did you know that?
Yeah. No, it's its own department, and it was its own department that was also getting military access equipment. And so,
crazy.
They have like surplus grenade. What school enforcement situation could possibly arise that would involve the use of a grenade launcher? A grenade launcher.
But they got a great deal on it, though.
Yeah. Well, sure. No.
You know, sometimes you just love a sale.
Sometimes you just love a sale. In any case, the Republicans have decided they're going to have their own response to all of this.
Yeah.
Led by Tim Scott.
Right.
They found only black senator.
Right. They found their only black person. And a lot of people have been like sort of giving the Republicans flack for like finding their only black senator to lead the charge on this.
Wait till you hear about the Democrats.
Right. We have twice as many.
That's right.
As one.
Two.
Two. We have two. So like 3 out of 100 senators being black is not enough, guys.
Right.
So, like, we can do better and we must do better because, you know, the bills that we're getting out of our own Congress are reflective of the people who are in that Congress. And having only Tim Scott, Cory Booker, and Kamala Harris be the black representatives in the Senate is not cutting it. You know, bless all three of their hearts.
Except for Tim Scott's.
Except for Tim Scott's. Yeah.
Tim Scott did have to explain Juneteenth to Donald Trump this week, so he has been doing something.
I have a hard time believing that, but like also, the more I think about it, like maybe he also didn't know. Somebody who scheduled that rally of his knew what Juneteenth was and knew about the Oklahoma
City. Right. Well, I don't think
There's a chance that Donald Trump didn't know. Yeah, for sure.
I don't believe for a second that he knew any of this.
We're coming up on that story anyway. Yeah, but,
that's a separate story. but right. Tim Scott's also involved in that story.
Yes, he is. But, you know, he just sort of like, I heard an interview with him and like, you want to pull for him in sort of like this aspect of what he has been charged to do. But it also, you know, he's still a Republican and he's still from South Carolina. So, you know, what do you do?
It's hard to know.
So anyway, you know, he wants to use Breonna Taylor as a reason to get more data on no-knock warrants. You know, he wants to have a commission to figure out best practices for use of force. And, you know, it's like, I mean, like, okay, fine, I guess. And on some level, a commission to figure out best practices for use of force is potentially just as useful as what the Democrats were trying to pass. Because all of this does really...
In the sense that
really,
none of this is useful.
Right. In the sense that, like, also, so much of this really does fall to state and local governments, like supplying them with some sort of like, here's what you should be doing, even if it's not something that you can pass into law, because there's a lot of things that like local governments are going to have to do that like the House can't necessarily do anything for. But what they could do is have a commission and say, here's what you should do. So on some level, 90% of the time, usually I think having a commission is like a trash idea.
Right.
That doesn't accomplish anything.
I don't believe in commissions or
time.
Task forces.
Right. On some level, it might be something helpful that they could do.
But this is like a bullshit setup idea for a commission anyway.
100%. Especially from Tim Scott. Like, I don't believe that like a Tim Scott-led commission in the Republican-led Senate is going to do anything.
No, but even think about using Breonna Taylor as a reason to get more data on no-knock warrants. Like,
yeah, right.
We have one piece of data about no-knock warrants that I think makes them an untenable policy, and that's that police broke into an innocent woman's home and murdered her. If that is a thing that can happen in a no-knock warrant situation, then you don't actually need data on how many innocent women or men and children are murdered in their homes because police are bursting in and killing them in their sleep.
Right.
If that is what results from, if that is even a possibility that can result from a no-knock warrant, then I want to, I don't really want any more data on them. I want data on how, I want data on maybe figuring out how you can, if you're desperate to keep a no-knock warrant policy, how you can make sure there are zero fatalities in a no-knock warrant situation, but you can't. Okay. But so like getting more data on a situation where an innocent woman is murdered in her home is like, how insulting.
I know,
like,
right?
We don't need more. The data that we needed was just that innocent people were dying because of a policy we were proactively using.
Right, that's
like,
it.
That's enough.
There's the data. Yeah.
We got it.
Yeah.
So in any case, there is like, the Democrats have been tiptoeing around what to do about sort of the language of defund the police and how to kind of frame their opposition to police brutality while also not seeming like they're against it. And they are potentially responding to polls that there are a few polls showing that people are like generally satisfied with the job the police are doing in their local neighborhoods that came out in the last couple weeks. And I feel like they are kind of here's the thing. I feel that people feel about the police the way they feel about health insurance companies.
Yes.
If you are somebody who lives in a neighborhood that is not heavily policed, you probably have not had terrible interactions with them. You probably are just sort of in a live and let live situation with the police because things seem fine and you're fine and they're fine and everyone's fine. Just as if you're someone who's not sick, then you've never had to use your health insurance. So you don't realize your health insurance company is a pile of steaming crap.
I think that's absolutely true. Also see similar numbers like this when you poll, you say, what do you think about the United States Congress? It's trash. It's worse than cockroaches. What do you think about your congressperson? They're great.
They're fine. Yeah. Yeah. No. So I feel like worrying about these kind of polling numbers and how to respond, like how to sort of frame your response so that it doesn't upset all of these people who are fine, I guess, with the policing in their community. But none of these people were like, it's spectacular.
Right.
There's nothing I like better than the policing that's going on in my community. Right. Like, I mean, the police are like a thing that you don't want to actually have to interact with. So if you are lucky enough to not have to interact with the police, then you would have very mediocre feelings. Like, you would feel fine because nothing had happened that would ever give you an impression of how to feel about them.
Right.
So this is like a trash survey.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's nothing.
And that also means that almost a third of people are living in communities where they're unsatisfied with the policing.
Yeah.
Which is still a lot of people. In any case, Louisville, which is where Breonna Taylor was killed in the no-knock warrant scenario, passed a law banning them.
Yep,
because Breonna's law. They haven't arrested the people that killed her.
God.
But at least they were able to determine that one no-knock warrant death was enough to show that that policy is not an effective policy, which it's probably not the first no-knock warrant death, let's be honest.
No,
but it is. They also, as part of that ordinance, passed laws requiring body cameras and that data be kept for a certain amount of time. Yeah. But hey, guys, let's also arrest the people that broke into Breonna Taylor's home and killed her.
Hello?
What are we doing?
God.
We're going to pass a law in her name and we're not going to actually bring... And like, if this is the justice system we have, then it has to be something that we can apply in this situation.
Yeah.
If you want to say to me that we need to re-envision what justice looks like, then let's have that discussion. But we start with regular people. We don't start with the police.
Yeah.
In any case.
Totally.
But
even Rand Paul introduced Justice for Breonna Taylor, which would ban no-knock warrants for federal law enforcement. So, like, listen, if you are Tim Scott, who is needing additional information, and Rand Paul is a person who seems to have all of the information, Rand Paul's always the last guy to know. So if you are Tim Scott, you can't have allowed Rand Paul to get there before you as the person who is running the task force on this.
It's very embarrassing. It's very embarrassing.
Yikes.
It's not great. It's not
man.
Great. Right. Also not great, coronavirus.
Ooh, it's bad, guys. I won't get back. Remember when it was bad before?
It's worse now.
It's bad again. Right. Yeah.
25 states have had spikes of over 10%. We're up to 116,000 deaths.
Right. Remember when we surpassed 100,000 deaths? I realize time is relative right now, but it seemed like it was just maybe the week before last, and I think actually it was.
Right. I think that was actually...
I don't think this is just my mind playing tricks on me, and it was actually like 6 months ago. So not great, guys. And it's the South and the West, which is where we live. So that's not great. I mean, it's happening in other places also, but...
Also, it's going to come back in the places that it's not happening. And it's New England and the Midwest where it's been going in the right direction generally, and that's because they have had really, you know, serious social distancing laws.
Yep.
But all of these laws have just recently started to let up.
Yep.
And so we're going to see, just as in California, where we're going to see, we're seeing spikes and we're going to keep seeing them because we are now just out eating in restaurants. the Midwest and New England are going to see the same thing happen.
Yeah. Arizona is currently at 84% of ICU bed hospitalization. North Carolina is at 80%. LA County, I'm not sure what percentage it is, but there's been a lot of reporting that like they could be full within as quickly as the next 2 weeks. They're saying like 2 to 4 weeks if it doesn't come back down, and there's no reason to think that it would start coming down right now. We've had a run of like our worst days ever. We had our actual worst day ever on either Wednesday or Thursday, I can't remember, and it's been hovering around that number since then. So it's not great. And I think a lot of people are sort of like starting to come to terms with that, the idea that this is just going to be endemic to the US until it is something that we can deal with either therapeutically or through a vaccine. Because, you know, I've been seeing all this reporting about sort of like everybody worried about the second wave. And it's like, what do you mean the second wave?
Right. We're just it's in like, the wave is continuing.
The wave, like, it's the just
wave
a wave.
Just like had a weird flat moment where it, now it's back up.
It's, right. It's a giant wave.
On the same wave. Right.
Yeah. So there's not been any decrease from the first wave. Like, it started coming down in a few places, but as soon as it started coming down, that's when we opened up. So that was the wrong thing to do. But, like, this is just going to be a thing that we now live with. And I think, to a certain degree, that is a thing that, like, our elected officials have known for a while. And that it's that idea that is sort of, like, driving the idea that it's okay to open. Because I think they have, and I almost, part of me just wish that they would say this. But I think that they're trying to not freak people the fuck out. But, like, I think we know. We're not stupid. We're, like, living in the world. But, like, I think that, like, you know, if they would just say, look, this is something that is going to be ongoing. We are not going to be able to get rid of this. Like, that's not a thing that we are able to do. Too many people have it. We've had too many cases. It spreads too quickly. But we are going to have to figure out a way to live in the world with it if we want to live in the world with it, which, I mean, I think people would like to try and figure out how to do.
Right.
And I feel like that would go a long way, actually. And I don't think anybody will actually ever say that. But, like, you know, there's been so many questions, especially here in LA County, which is like a fucking shit fest. And it's like they just opened some gyms the other day.
Yeah.
So it's everybody is just like here kind of like pulling their hair out because it's like, wait a minute. What? Like, we're about to run. There's not going to be an ICU bed for me, but you would like me to go to a restaurant? I don't think so.
That's it. It also, they're not, they in, like, this kind of opening, if it's going to be endemic, if it's going to be something we live with forever, then they need to be really serious about asking people to take precautions, that they're not doing a very good job
100%.
Of policing. So, like, you know, we've been at these protests, and at these protests, everyone has had a mask.
Totally.
These
They've been
the protesters are very serious about wearing masks. And that's great, right? Because that's the only time I'm in a crowd ever.
Yep.
But when you just go out to go do something in LA, most people are not in masks. If we are going to have to live with coronavirus, we should be like doubling and tripling down on the idea that everyone wear a mask outside.
Or wearing double and triple masks like you were doing earlier today.
Exactly. Yeah, I was double masking today. But I mean, we should be sort of, we should be encouraging people to believe in at least the precautions instead of, you know, we opened and there really hasn't been much guidance about mask wearing. The mask wearing is something that people are enforcing socially in some circles, but you certainly, I mean, the whole neighborhood is people without masks. And
there's been so much reporting that, like, I just listened to a long interview with, like, some epidemiologist on NPR the other day who was basically, you know, touting a bunch of new studies that's basically like, if 60 to 70% of people wore masks every time that they were outside and they wore them properly, then we could literally, like, that could be what we could do to, and not end this, but, like, be able to carry on with ourselves.
Well,
but,
and there so needs to like, be, like, a public awareness campaign around also the fact that you're wearing masks to protect other people from you, not to, so it's not just a personal choice, do I believe that the illness could affect me?
Right.
It's about respecting other people.
Right.
Because that's not well understood. The number of people who say to me, I don't think it's such a big deal, so I don't need to wear a mask because I'm not that worried about myself.
Right.
Then I'm like, well, you're not wearing the mask for yourself. Do you pass someone on the street who has diabetes at any point during the day? You don't know. But you could kill them.
Yep.
Like, that is not well understood right now.
Yeah.
And that's something that a public awareness campaign could deal with.
Totally.
Instead of us just, hearing announcements about everything that's opening and everyone assuming everything's fine.
Right.
Which is what's going on.
That's exactly what Donald Trump is doing, because he's starting up his rallies again.
That's right. He's the first one he's decided to do on the most insulting date and location he could possibly imagine. And right. I agree with Brent that I don't think he knew, because I don't think he knows anything.
Right. He's an idiot.
Somebody maybe knew. Somebody. I mean, this is too much of a coincidence.
Right.
But,
exactly.
But he was going to choose. He was doing it on Juneteenth, which Here's the thing. Maybe if you just like went to the school somewhere and like never read a book. Like, you don't know what Juneteenth is.
I was an adult before I knew what Juneteenth was.
I was, too. Yeah, that was not something we learned in school.
No.
If you are a citizen of Twitter, it's fucking everywhere.
Sure.
Since years, for years now, that's something that you can't escape on Twitter. So while both of us were adults when we learned what Juneteenth was, and Donald Trump certainly was because he learned about it this week, it's something that his favorite place on Earth, Twitter, is... well versed. Right.
I was gonna say he should have known. Yeah, and it was also in Tulsa.
Yeah, where in 1921,
the Tulsa massacre.
Right, there was a massacre.
Right, exactly. White mob killed hundreds of people in 1921. And Tulsa was like a thriving black community. It was known as
Black Wall Street.
Yeah. So anyway, but yeah, Tim Scott was being interviewed, and he was like, "Well, once I told Trump about the date and the city, then he moved it." Because they did move it. They moved it a day. It's on the 20th now.
Now it's on the 20th, yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, man.
And he said he was moving it in honor of his African-American friends and supporters.
Mm, yes. I'm sure there will be.
We had previously scheduled our MAGA rally in Tulsa, Oklahoma for June 19th. A big deal. Unfortunately, however, this would fall on the Juneteenth holiday. Many of my African-American friends and supporters have reached out to suggest we consider changing the date.
Yes. One way that Trump would have just known about Juneteenth himself without having to be on Twitter is if Juneteenth was an actual holiday.
That's right.
So we could think about that.
Which is something that some companies are now doing in lieu of doing anything meaningful to address racial disparity. They've decided to give Juneteenth as a holiday. And listen, here's how about that. I'm in favor of all holidays. I was in favor, and this is a controversial thing, and maybe none of you will ever speak to me again, but think about it through the eyes of someone who doesn't want to work. I thought that we should keep Columbus Day and have Indigenous people get their own day right. instead of having to take a cast-off day from fucking Columbus, and we should just take them both off. And we can learn on Columbus Day how terrible Columbus is, or whatever.
Sure.
But, like, don't take away a holiday. You don't need to replace a holiday with a different holiday. Yeah. You only add holidays. You always add a holiday.
Yeah.
So, of course, everyone should be getting Juneteenth off.
Yeah.
We should get a week off for Juneteenth.
Let's do it.
I mean, for history.
Let's do it. Yeah.
Whether or not Trump's rally happens on the 19th or 20th,
It
is happening with the campaign's full knowledge that you might get coronavirus there, because they're making people sign a waiver saying they won't sue the campaign if they can track coronavirus there. So that is them admitting coronavirus is a thing that you could that could happen to you in a crowd.
Yeah.
And also that maybe holding a giant indoor rally opens them up to some liability.
Yep.
Apparently, this is not an ironclad contract, by the way. If, like, it doesn't exempt them from being sued if people can display that there was gross negligence. And I would contend that having a giant rally during a pandemic is gross negligence. So in that sense, it might be still open. You might be able to get away with suing them anyway.
I agree.
But once you're having to sign a waiver to go to a Trump rally that you don't mind if you catch coronavirus, like think.
Well, these are the people who already right. These people have already stated through their actions that they don't care that they catch coronavirus.
That's true.
These are people who have like probably all chosen not to wear masks. These are people who have.
Well, that's the other thing. That crowd is not going
to
be.
These are people. Right. These are people who think that Bill Gates is trying to. You know, control our minds by inventing a vaccine for this. Like, I mean, they are... So, like, they're fine.
It's not even a fun thing. Like, if you needed to sign this waiver because you really wanted to go to a trampoline park, then, like, by all means. Trampoline parks are important. But, like, this is not going to bring you joy in the way that a trampoline park might.
No.
Like, this is like you signing a waiver to sign yourself up for nonsense.
Yeah. The one thing that sort of made me find it hard to believe that Trump didn't know about Juneteenth and Tulsa was because he also did a bunch of super anti-gay shit on the fourth anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting during Pride Month.
Yeah.
So I feel like...
Well, someone on his staff has these dates in a calendar.
That's true. Yes. It's
his staff. It's not him.
Right.
But yeah. Someone in the Trump administration knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
Because this is too coincidental. All of June has like been a massive shit show of insulting dates and times and choices.
Yeah. But basically he signed an order that overrides the Obama policy that banned healthcare providers from discriminating against transgender patients and women seeking abortions. So now if you're a doctor who would like to discriminate against a transgender person, then you can.
Or a person who's had an abortion in the past.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. Right, yeah. You know, they did it on the Pulse nightclub date, so everyone really honed in on the transgender thing.
Right. Yeah.
But I would contend that a larger percentage of the population is probably affected by and in more sort of communities where this would actually be a problem, is probably affected by the fact that doctors are now allowed to discriminate against women who've had abortions.
Right.
I mean, that could happen to you anywhere in the country.
Totally.
And while, obviously, you can be transgender anywhere in the country as well.
Right. That's well, and you, not also, as you could also be a transgender person who has had an abortion.
I mean, that you could be double whammied here. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this is a really, this is bad news, Bears, right. over
well,
here.
Well, and also, like, in the middle of a pandemic, like, you're going to allow, like, healthcare providers to discriminate against people. Like, at least give it a couple fucking months, for God's sake. I mean, it's never going to be a good idea, but, like, literally, like, telling people that they can be discriminated against in their healthcare, like, during a time where it's very likely they might need healthcare is, like, a double mindfuck.
As a member of the public, want them to have access to healthcare.
Right. You would prefer that they not be discriminated against if they're going to get, like, treatment for COVID-19.
Exactly.
Just because they're a transgender person.
They also rolled back requirements that healthcare providers post information in 15 languages, which is just sort of a knife twist that is it's going to affect communities of color disproportionately, obviously.
Right.
But it's also another knife twist in the sort of area of not providing universal care during a pandemic.
Yeah.
Because it's going to make it, you know, we have a really complicated healthcare system in this country. And if you are not able to provide information about people's rights in their language, then there is a good chance that they don't have the tools you can't reason your way through the healthcare system here. So right. they are not going to have the tools to just know this information if it's not posted somewhere.
Totally.
And especially if we're dealing with immigrant populations who have not had a tremendous amount of experience with the healthcare system, like, that's also bad news, Bears.
Yeah.
But here's something I want to say, because I hear a lot of people, when I go on my Medicare for All rants, say to me, yes, but the Republicans would be brutal with a Medicare for All system, and they would totally, you know, they would weaken the protections until they weren't worth anything. They are already doing that to us.
Right.
And we don't even have any protections. These are the most bare bones basic protections that require you to treat transgender patients.
Right.
Transgender patients are just people who need healthcare.
Right.
It's not that. And in a pandemic, especially when you can finally reason your way through why their healthcare is actually important to you, the idea that this system doesn't guarantee them care in the first place, charges them inordinate amounts of money to get that care, and does not provide suitable doctors to them in probably a lot of places that they live. And then on top of that, you're going to roll back protections that require doctors to see them in, especially, you know, when there is a history in many locales of doctors not being interested in seeing patients who are either transgender or women who've had abortions or frankly don't speak English. Like, this system doesn't even offer you the protection of fake offering you healthcare. And then on top of that, you're supposed to wade through all this bullshit? I mean, who has time?
God. Truly.
Who has time?
God. Well, Trump's approval rating is totally tanking right now. And there was a new CNN poll that came out this week, and he was behind so badly in it, and his approval rating was so bad that he sent a letter to Jeff Zucker, the president of CNN, and demanded that they apologize.
He sent a cease and desist letter because he had got bad polling numbers. And by the way, this poll is consistent with polls that, like, every other polling person has done.
Yeah.
So basically, Trump hired the Trump team hired their own polling people.
Sure, like
McLaughlin and Associates, who are Republican pollsters that are among the least accurate pollsters in the game.
Totally.
And McLaughlin and Associates gave them all these talking points to send to CNN in their cease and desist letter about how their poll was not conducted appropriately because it was a poll that didn't that wasn't just registered voters. But it turns out that the percentage of people that were the poll he's referring to, where he was 14 points behind Biden, was only of the registered voters of the poll. So they had 1,259 adults in the poll, but only 1,125 were registered voters, and that 14 point margin is from the 1,125 voters. So that was wrong.
Yeah.
They said it was skewed anti-Trump because only 25% of it was Republican, but that's actually consistent with how most pollsters divvy up their polling demographics, because people are not often party aligned until after they have voted. And so you have a lot of undecided voters in a poll traditionally. And that also that it was conducted before the great economic news on Friday, but it actually wasn't. It was still being conducted during
and
that
also,
great economic news.
That great economic news, we found out, has not been so great also, too. Did you see that they've, like, the last 2 months that they, like, there was, like, an issue with, like, how it was, like, accounted or something like that? Like, probably, like, there was, like, a, you know, a column on a spreadsheet that was wrong or something, like, basically. So, like, we did add jobs, but, like, the month before we had, like, actually been closer to probably, like, somewhere between, like, 16 and 20% unemployment. So, like, it's not... So, like, yes, we added some jobs, but it's, like, also hasn't been, like, great.
We added jobs from, like, the fucking basement.
Right. Well, and this is the thing that he's going to try and do. And, you know, he's going to try and act like he's, you know, the
There's
fire
been a
department
recovery.
When he was actually the arsonist.
Exactly.
And we can't let him do that. I actually sort of feel like all of this makes sense to me, especially, like, his approval rating at 38%, which is, like, his worst since January of 2019. But it's on par with, like, where Jimmy Carter's was, where George Herbert Walker Bush's was. I think, and, like, perhaps I am delusional, and it's certainly 2020, so, like, God knows, like, you know, the Martians might be here next month. I don't know what's going to happen. We could be at war with, you know, Iceland
Anyone.
By,
right.
you know,
surprising
by November.
Places.
So, like, I don't know. However, I do really feel like these last couple weeks have been a time where, like, America collectively decided that, like, Donald Trump will not be the president any longer. He is no Maybe. Longer an acceptable choice for president. And I think that's reflected in his 38% approval rating, because I think that that is the 38% that probably will never leave, and literally everyone else has left.
Well, I was going to say also,
and it's
we're
not
talking
some,
about
oh, sorry, go ahead.
A 14-point margin for Joe Biden, who no one on earth is excited about.
Right,
so we're not talking about a candidate with enthusiasm that we can diminish the enthusiasm later. No one's enthusiasm could be more diminished for Joe Biden than
the
it
enthusiasm
is
to vote against Trump.
Right.
And so, I think it's going to be enough. 3 months ago, I was questioning whether it would be enough. I'm not anymore, actually. I really am not. And maybe I'm delusional.
I feel like, though, anything... there's
we
no
still
reason
have to, show
to declare...
We still have to go. You know, like,
it's only
that's
June.
The thing, you know? It's only June. Totally. Yeah.
Hillary Clinton did not make her VP pick until the end of July.
Right.
And the Republican convention's not till August.
Right.
I mean, anything could happen.
Right.
And my mom has a conspiracy theory, actually, that I think we should all know and keep in mind.
I mean, I love nothing more than a Carla Nordstrom conspiracy theory. So.
She thinks that Donald Trump is going to decide he doesn't want to do it anymore, which I have been saying for a while, that the only way he actually leaves is if he just decides he's over it and just quits.
Totally.
And that Mitt Romney is trying to position himself as the one to run, because he's been at that Black Lives Matter protest, and he's been sort of suddenly like a name because he's came out against Trump. And my mom was like, if Mitt Romney and Joe Biden run against each other for president, then, like, Mitt Romney could easily beat Joe Biden.
Totally.
Like, they're both totally uninspiring candidates who are physically and platform-wise interchangeable.
Yep.
And the one thing that Mitt Romney has is that he can claim he has a backbone because he stood up to Trump, even though we know that's not true.
Totally.
And Joe Biden has nothing of the sort to hang his hat on.
Yep.
And so my mom was like, then it's a disaster.
Oh, God. I could see that.
So
totally
don't count out 2020, you guys. Anything could happen.
Anything could happen.
But I do agree with you that Donald Trump is sort of in a tough spot here.
Yeah, I think that, like, in a tough enough spot that, like, it's not something that, like, he could come up with like a really great policy idea and like bail himself out. Like,
well, he's never come up with a really great policy idea so far.
He never has, but like, I has put himself in a situation. And again, as we've now said 100 times, anything can happen. But like, I just don't know what, like, once someone decides that you are an unacceptable choice, like, what makes him re-acceptable? I would think almost nothing.
What made him re-acceptable late enough in the race last time? I think it's still so early.
I know. No, you're
right. And things are changing fast. And I think that the thing that he's going to try to harness, and this is something that some of his criticisms of the CNN poll were about, how they were asking about race relations and not job creation, which is hilarious to think of them asking that in the midst of like a huge economic crisis when like, you know, 20% of the country is unemployed, slash more, but 20% is officially unemployed. But I think he thinks that the crisis is going to give him a bottom to show like a surprise win out of. And where he has his strength, I mean, for whatever reason, is not really with these hate antics. I don't think that actually is what works for him. I think what works for him is that there is a large sector of the population that was not ever served by mediocre Democrats that wants fucking jobs.
Yeah.
And if he can spin it so that he looks like he's giving them, even though he took them away, even though he is the arsonist, not the fire department or whatever, I mean, these are not the savviest voters.
No,
what does Joe Biden have to say? He didn't give them jobs.
Right.
So, I mean, I think the key, like if this moment was happening in October, then I would be like, for sure, this guy's cooked. Yeah. But I don't know what's going to happen because the economy does... Something has to happen once the economy restarts in order for, you know, the economy to restart. And the numbers, even if it's not reflected in people's everyday lives, the numbers are going to look more promising than they were. Maybe he just does really well with low expectations.
We also might have 500,000 people dead come November also. So
Exactly. A lot of those people come from demographics that are heavily Trump voters.
Yeah.
So that might not work out to his favor. But also a lot of them are people's beloved grandparents. Totally. So.
We found out just over the weekend, the Washington Post reported that they have sources close to Biden's campaign that he's got a shortlist for vice president. We're down to 6, supposedly. The Biden campaign immediately denied it, but that's what you do. That's what happens. Somebody from your campaign says something that's absolutely true, and then you say that it's false because it wasn't supposed to get to the press. It's an uninspiring list mostly, but it's also the list that I would assume would be the list. So
it's a list I could have named off the top of my head and then been like, ugh.
There's one, my dark horse is still there.
That's right.
And then a new one that I just learned about was even being considered recently. Susan Rice, yeah. So here's the 6 names. Kamala Harris, everybody's still mostly betting on her. I don't know why. Keisha Lance Bottoms, mayor of Atlanta. Val Demings, congresswoman from Florida. Susan Rice, who's apparently moving up on the list.
Interesting.
We'll get to her in a second. Elizabeth Warren.
Still in there. Still in the game.
Shocking. And then Michelle Lujan Grisham, the governor of New Mexico. My dark horse. Right. Well, that's the other thing. Like, you know, as much as it seems like we need a black woman as the vice presidential candidate right now, and I agree with that, I am on board generally with that, although I mean my love for Elizabeth Warren is is what it is, even though she sort of has fallen out of favor with
me. You can make an identity politics choice or an ideological choice, and he is probably going to make an identity politics choice.
I think he probably will,
even though both are important to consider.
But in terms of identity politics, like, you know, in August we might be, you know, putting all Hispanics in concentration camps. I don't know. You know what I mean? So it's like, on some level, I'm glad that he hasn't picked yet because,
I think he should wait until the very last
2 minute. Months ago, he'd have picked Amy Klobuchar, and she's notably absent from this list, thank God. Also notably absent from this list is Stacey Abrams. And she, on Wednesday, she was on Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and she said that she had not yet heard from the Biden campaign about the official vetting process. So, it's not going to be her, which isn't really surprising to me. I'm surprised she didn't get sort of like the original full vet.
Right, the original vetting.
But, you know,
do
I mean,
they
I,
like personally not get along?
I don't know.
I feel like, given who has made it onto this list, i.e. a governor no one's heard of, right. Like Val Demings, who is a fine congresswoman, but certainly not someone of national stature.
Right, she's only been, isn't it, this her first term right now? Or maybe her
right,
second?
I think so. I don't know, maybe her second. Susan Rice, who hasn't been anywhere near anyone's, has not been a name anyone's right. uttered in years. Like, I mean, listen,
and I want to talk about her for 2 seconds, because every time yes. somebody brings her up to me, I'm always like, look, no, and here's why. And they always roll their eyes at me. But like, once we're in this world, especially with Joe Biden as our candidate, like, we can't give, and I'm not saying we shouldn't pick a progressive or something, but like, I don't want to give the other side something that is going to be the thing that like they can rally around. Like, they might sort of like hate Kamala Harris's politics and like whatever, and think that she's like an angry black woman, and they might think all of those things about her. But like, the thing that Susan Rice does to Republicans' brains in regards to Benghazi is, I get it. It's insane. It's crazy. Sure. It's QAnon level, like, nonsense, sure. like, conspiracy theory, lunacy, and that is not fair to Susan Rice, and I can acknowledge all of those things. But, like, also, the thing that I don't want to do between August and November is relitigate Benghazi.
Yeah.
I don't have time
for
it.
No, I agree.
And I don't think that the only people who do have time for it is Republicans. They got a lot of time to relitigate
yeah.
Benghazi.
Well, they have nothing else
they
to
would
litigate.
They would love nothing better than to do yeah. that. And yeah. so, like, I guess on some level I feel bad for Susan Rice on that front. I don't know anything about her politics. She might be perfectly capable and, like, you know, whatever. My guess
she
is that
is
she
definitely
is
definitely capable.
Capable.
She is
right.
definitely moderate. She
right,
is definitely someone that you... I know people that have worked sort of in, not with her, but sort of in her environs, and sure. found her an incredibly inspiring woman to watch, because she was like great. Fucking serious in rooms full of men that were really rude to her.
I believe it.
However, that is not necessarily enough to overcome the fact that she unfortunately brings this liability, and she doesn't bring anything politically.
Right.
So that's, I think, the other thing that we need to remember is that Joe Biden is like a vacuum politically.
Right.
He needs someone who brings something more than just their face to the table here.
Right.
And as much as Susan Rice is like an incredibly competent and capable woman, and certainly someone who is like an inspiring woman to watch in her, you know, in her career, she doesn't bring anything politically to this, to his, she doesn't bring anything to his platform. Doesn't yeah. bring anything to our understanding of what Joe Biden for president is.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the same issue that I have to some extent with everyone on this list, except
totally.
Maybe Liz Warren. But I think it's even more compounded by the fact that Susan Rice is not in elected office.
Right. I agree.
So.
Hey. Well, we had yeah. elections this week.
Yeah.
So that was
in Georgia, too. In Stacey Abrams'
Hey, John Ossoff is back on our lives again.
You guys, what?
Stop nominating
is with that
him
guy.
Things.
Stop nominating him.
I don't like his face. I don't want to see it anymore.
Well, it's hard because I forget that I don't like his face because I don't remember his face because he's not memorable. He's yeah. the world. He's like the epitome of the boring Democrat.
Totally.
If you had to pick a boring Democrat out of a lineup of people who looked like John Ossoff,
yeah.
he would be the one that you would still come up with.
Like, he looks like a stock photo is what he looks like.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And he sounds like a stock photo.
He totally does.
He everything about him is stock quality.
Yeah. Anyway, this primary in Georgia was a disaster.
Yeah.
There were hours long waits. There were the problems with new voting machines. There was a lack of available ballots. There was widespread reporting of people requesting vote by mail ballots and not receiving
them. People were
them.
Voting into the next day.
People waited like literally like all day. Like there's the image that you've probably seen of that woman who was like waiting with her child, like in the pouring rain, like sitting in a chair with an umbrella over her. Like she yeah. literally brought her chair to go vote. Can't be doing that. You don't need a chair to vote.
No. Well, she did need a chair to vote. She shouldn't have needed a chair to vote.
Well, right. She did. Yeah. Anyway.
Right. She was smart to bring that chair.
Everybody is, of course, like, terrified of what this means for November. The Republican Secretary of State is, like, gonna supposedly look into it. But, like, it's obviously...
Well, it was so bad that he still had to promise to look into it.
Right.
Like, it was that bad.
Right. But anyway, of course, Democrats are, like, looking at Georgia as a possible swing state. Their governor's race was close with Stacey Abrams. They've added something like 700,000 new voters to their rolls, like, just since that primary. So I think that, you know, this is problematic. The one thing that I would say is I think in part the reason that they had so much trouble with these lines voting is because so many people went. And you plan for how many voting places that you need per, you know, previous elections. And
right. you base your situation on turnout.
And I'm not saying that there weren't problems. So many of these problems were happening in minority counties and precincts.
As
so
always.
Like, as always. So, like, obviously, there are issues that do need to be looked at. But, like, they had, with, like, 91% of the vote in on Friday night, they had, like, almost 960,000 votes cast.
Yeah.
In the 2016 Senate primary, they had 310,000 people
That's
who voted.
Nuts.
So over three times.
There were three times as many voters.
In the gubernatorial primary in 2018, they had 550,000 ballots cast. So
almost twice as many voters.
Right. So Democrats in Georgia are ready to go, guys.
Yeah, they're coming for you.
They're coming for you. And the reason that they're coming for you is because you're making voting so hard for you. Like, this
That's
is
right.
another one of those
this
instances
happens every
time. Where it happens all the time. And, like, I don't want to diminish the idea that, like, you know, disenfranchising voters isn't a big deal, because disenfranchising voters is a big deal. However, it's also a real good way to get voters to make sure that they're going to vote against you.
Yeah, there's nothing that makes you want to vote more than right.
the reason that
being
woman
faced with the possibility that you may right. not get to vote.
That woman the reason that woman waited with her child for 8 hours in the pouring rain was because someone tried to tell her that she couldn't vote.
That's right.
So, you know, it can cut both ways. I'm not saying that they shouldn't try and get this shit figured out, because, like, it should be much easier to vote than that. So, like, get it figured the fuck out. But also, you know, this will be the fault of the Republicans if they're all voted out in Georgia in 2020.
Yeah.
They'll have only need to look inward.
It's also,
Elliot Engel, a man who will only need to look inward if he ends up losing his primary.
There's been some excitement on the progressive primary challenger.
Finally. We haven't had a great run, but there's still a lot of primaries left, and I'm feeling good.
We had a great run in 2018 because usually progressive opponents do not win anything. And instead, we had some fucking
And it hasn't been all for naught, you know, this time around either. But there's been a few races where it's sort of like, okay, we're going to watch this race, and it's going to be, oh, it's Jessica Cisneros, it's this person,
right,
it's this
and
person.
Right, and we never have the AOC victory.
Right.
This Friday, though. So Elliot Engel is the New York congressperson who was criticized because he was at an event at a rally in his home district and said, if I didn't have a primary, I wouldn't care about coronavirus.
And the only reason that he went there was because he wanted to be seen at a rally, because he had not been seen in his district throughout the entire time of coronavirus.
That's right.
He hadn't gone home.
He has not been getting great press. And then on Friday, the New York Times endorsed his opponent, Jamal Bowman, who is progressive and has... After that time, not after that Times endorsement, I think, but around the time of the Times endorsement, or at least in the last few weeks, got AOC's endorsement.
Yeah.
It's just, we have like an exciting potential, like, overcoming an incumbent situation going on. This is something actually that has not been getting a lot of play, but all over New York City, progressive opponents are taking on even Democrats who are seen as relatively progressive. And it's something where, you know, the Democratic clubs are really split about it, and everyone's really, like, pulling their hair out about it. But, like, it's so important to get... If you are a Democrat who does great constituent services, then you don't have to worry about this kind of opponent.
Totally.
If you are a Democrat that hasn't been seen in your district, however,
right.
that's a time you might want to worry about this kind of opponent. So if you're a Democrat that people in the district feel like every interaction they've had with your office has been, you know, has been valuable, and that you've taken them seriously and you've helped address issues in their community... then opponents, you're not as open to this kind of, you know, situation. But that's not what's been going on, apparently, with Elliott Engel's district.
And the one thing that Bauman had been having trouble with was fundraising, because that's always hard, especially when you're running against an incumbent who's been in Congress for 32 years. He's got connections. He's got moneyed connections. But since that hot mic moment in April, Bauman has actually out-fundraised Engel. So,
well, that's he got AOC and Sanders endorsement.
So that was an influx of cash. But I think that he actually started outraising him before their endorsement came through, because that hot mic endorsement was in April, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's true. And also, I've been noticing, just because I'm sort of I'm a person who gets targeted for a lot of New York political ads, and I've been getting like a ton of ads for him. And so I started to notice that his fundraising boost must have come a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
or, you know, about a month ago, because that's when suddenly he was like on every social media thing I'm on. He was like everywhere.
Well, so. And the same thing has happened to me in this next race that we're talking about. Carla Nordstrom has been on the ground on this one for months, apparently. God bless her.
Right.
The Kentucky Senate primary. You have probably seen all of the polls of Amy McGrath maybe beating Mitch McConnell, and you've... you know, known that Amy McGrath was such a great candidate because she had so many viral moments in her 2018 House race that she had her ass handed to her in. So, of course, the DNC was like, Amy McGrath is going to beat Mitch McConnell. And all of the entire world was like, let's send money to Amy McGrath because she's running against Mitch McConnell. But nobody thought to ask themselves whether Amy McGrath was like a good candidate or not.
Yeah, she was just a different candidate than Mitch McConnell.
And as it turns out, the answer is no, she's not. And it also turns out that she has a really great primary opponent right now who is getting, he's got a lot of momentum, better momentum than Trump falling down the stairs.
Well, he too, he got Sanders and AOC's endorsements, but also the state's two largest newspapers endorsed
him. Well, and those in Kentucky are probably more meaningful, if we're being honest. I don't know that like Joe Blow in Kentucky cares whether AOC comes to town or not.
That Sanders and AOC are more important from a fundraising perspective.
100%. So I've donated to him since that happened, and I don't know that I would have known to otherwise.
Right. But we're talking about Charles Booker, by the way.
Yeah, Charles Booker. Yes.
He is also someone who, unlike Amy McGrath, seems to have like a lot more connection to the community, because he's gotten a lot of Kentucky elected officials, and then he's also just been someone that seems to have kind of grassroots momentum that comes from him being on the ground. That Amy McGrath, where a lot of her campaign, the money's come from the outside, the excitement's come from the outside. His sort of started in Kentucky, because that's the newspaper endorsement.
Right, he's in the Kentucky State House. He represents Louisville, which is where he's from. And he's really sort of has like found his voice and his footing sort of like in the wake of the Breonna Taylor issue. He's Black. So he really has been sort of like a very like real community leader and a voice for that. So like it has been sort of like a recent, you know, McGrath has been fundraising well since like February, basically. Yeah. This is sort of like a new thing for Booker here, where he has kind of like had a thing that like allowed him to show like his leadership on an issue. And also just sort of like in the time that we're in right now, it just seems like that's why those two newspapers endorsed him, because one of them even acknowledged that like his progressive platform was probably too far for some voters, but like just in terms of like what McGrath was and what he was and like what the time called for, like that's why they endorsed him. It wasn't because that they agreed with all of his progressive politics. It was just sort of like, it seems like the time calls for somebody like him.
Also, Amy McGrath has fucked up several times.
Right. Well, I mean, a lot of people probably thought to themselves like, hey, maybe I don't want somebody in the Senate who like might have accidentally voted for Brett Kavanaugh.
Exactly.
Which is what she did, like not long after she announced that she was running. She apologized for it quickly after a lot of people told her that was not a good idea.
After the entire of America mentioned to her that that's not what you do. But she doesn't have any many in-state endorsements. You know, he's somebody who I think he kind of popped out of nowhere because he was somebody who was connected at the state level and was not getting national level exposure.
Right.
And now we're sort of seeing that kind of boiling over.
Yeah.
But she's also been, I mean, her whole campaign is just focused on her not being Mitch McConnell.
That's it. Well, and that's what my favorite part of the endorsement from the Louisville Courier Journal, which is their largest newspaper that did endorse Booker. They also scolded the DNC in their
Oh, yeah.
In the editorial, they said, quote, "We also believe the National Democratic Party was too quick to offer its full support and fundraising apparatus to a candidate who has never held public office and stumbled out of the gate when announcing her candidacy." And then they also called her, quote, "unimaginative and uninspiring." Oh,
that seems right.
And they also said that she was overly focused on McConnell instead of any vision of her own. So, of course, the DNC liked her.
Yeah.
Like, this is just the type of candidate they're looking for.
Well, and this is, I think, why it's problematic when they make clear choices in primary. Like, when they intervene in primaries that are state-level primaries, like, let the voters in Kentucky tell you who their candidate is.
Right?
And then support that candidate.
And then support them, and then offer fundraising for them. But,
right,
like, don't,
of course.
Don't, like, make America send, like, tens of millions of dollars to Amy McGrath, who's, like, a hack.
Exactly. No, it doesn't make sense. It's not efficient from their perspective, and it's also not effective.
Yeah.
Because the most important thing that a candidate can have is voters.
Right.
It's not, the money only helps you find the voters.
Totally.
So,
One thing I forgot to mention, going back to the last story really quickly, but Nancy Pelosi is still standing behind Elliot Engel after all of his shenanigans.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So, anyway, of course she is.
Of course.
Oh my God, NASCAR coming into the 20th century, the 19th century, the whatever century we're in after the Civil War.
Right.
Banning Confederate
coming
flags.
Coming to the end of the 19th century, finally.
Jesus.
Yeah, they banned Confederate flags. And it happened really fast, too.
It did.
They have like one black NASCAR driver?
One full-time NASCAR driver in all of their series. Because they have like the NASCAR series, and then they have the Xfinity series, and then they also have truck racing. I don't know why you have to race trucks and like also race cars.
Why do you have to race cars? I don't know why you need to race anything.
I don't know why you do either. Like if that was exciting to you, you could just go sit on the side of the interstate as far as I'm concerned.
These people are just driving in circles.
Anyway, Confederate flags, big things at these races. Not shocking at all. But anyway, they're not doing it anymore. They said, quote, "Bringing people together around a love for racing and the community that it creates is what makes our fans and sport special. The display of the Confederate flag will be prohibited from NASCAR events and properties." I don't know what NASCAR thinks it's doing. Like, bringing people together.
I am
in some sort of community of love is not what NASCAR.
I mean, excited
about this,
though.
It's charming if they think that's what they're doing. But
We up in the town upstate that my parents live in, there is a county fair that there's been a big fight for years to try to get them to ban the sale of the Confederate flags there, or the display and sale of Confederate flags in upstate New York, which was never at any point part of the Confederacy and has no heritage to celebrate in that regard whatsoever.
Right.
And there's been like a huge amount of resistance from the county, and it's been like wild. Like there's been like a project to document all the Confederate flags in the district, which are like there's like numerous Confederate flags being displayed all over this one county in upstate New York that has, again, no ties to the Confederacy whatsoever, being that it is in New York State, a state that was never even half almost a part of the Confederacy. And I feel like this is sort of like the gay marriage ruling of the Confederate flag issue, where it's like you get to come along for the ride once you sort of have someone on the top say, like, well, we don't need to do that. We don't need to worry about this anymore.
Totally.
I feel like NASCAR is like the presidency of the Confederate flag, you know? Like, if NASCAR, if it's good enough for NASCAR to not do the Confederate flag, maybe we can all stop. Because who else are they doing it for?
Right.
Who's it for if it's not for NASCAR?
I agree.
The only time I've seen a Confederate-themed party in upstate New York, I was driving home from college once, and I passed by an outrageous display of Confederate flags, again in upstate New York, a place that's not related to the Confederacy. And the only other flag that was flying at this Confederate party that I fucking ducked at as I was driving, because I was like, what is happening, was a NASCAR flag. So I ask again, who are we doing it for if not NASCAR? If NASCAR asks us to stop, can't we all stop?
Yes, I think that we can.
I would say yes.
Yes. Oh, man. In final news, remember when you were watching television and the Secret Service and the Park Police and all of the other police forces in D.C.
The unmarked police that were guarding the...
Remember when you saw them use tear gas on all of the peaceful protesters?
With your eyes.
With your eyeballs.
And also watched a newscaster explain to you that that was what was happening from the ground where they were being tear gassed in that moment?
Yeah. As it turns out, your eyeballs saw the right thing.
That was tear gas.
That was indeed tear gas. Because after everybody was like, wait, we just got tear gassed. And the news was like, the president tear gassed everybody to get out of the way so he could go, you know, hold a Bible. Right. Both the Secret Service and the Park Police were like, we didn't use any tear gas.
No, that wasn't us.
No, we didn't. We thought, I don't know. What are you talking
about?
That
didn't happen.
That didn't happen at all.
It was only live on national television. You can't prove anything.
But now they think maybe they actually did use tear gas.
They're willing to admit, after examining the evidence, being all of America watching live. Were they firing smoke machines into the crowd? Like, what were they thinking in that video that very clearly shows them doing this, that they were doing?
But they both issued statements recently that said that they actually did. They were like, oops.
Surprise!
God, America.
So you can believe what your eyes show you is happening definitely on TV. Just like you can believe that Donald Trump almost fell off of a ramp earlier. Even though he claims that he was just using momentum to help him get down faster.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just like you can believe that because of your eyes.
Yep.
This was not a deep fake of the the Park Police firing tear gas at protesters. Fake. It was exactly what you saw.
Yep. Oh, man. All right.
That's the news this week.
That's it.
I'm going to go tend to my sunburn.
One more week down. Yeah, same.
I'll see you guys out in the street as soon as the sunburn has healed.
That's right.
And we will be back to tell you how Juneteenth went.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Now that Donald Trump knows it's an important national holiday.
That's right.
Great. Bye. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.